If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Monday. You know what that means? It's time for RFRX, your prescription for coping. I'm Kara. I'll be your host this evening. And I have with me as well, Helen, who is lost in a lovely background. I love your Van Gogh.
Thank you.
How are you doing? Did you paint that? Is it like one of those?
Yes, I did. Yeah. In a past life.
Yeah, I don't mean the original, obviously. I did one of those paint by the numbers thing one time where you like go to a function and yeah. They help you recreate famous paintings. Mine did not look that good. It was barely recognizable.
But, listen, we already have one resident artist, and like I can draw a palm tree kind of good. And then that's about it. So
That's fair. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's lovely. I like it.
Thank you.
Outstanding. So moving right along, let's go ahead and get started. I am so happy to get to introduce our speaker, who many of you will probably recognize from previous RFRX hangouts. It is Stephanie. Welcome back. And a brief description: losing faith for a person born into the LDS Church, aka the Mormons, has been compared to death by a thousand cuts. Stephanie's family has roots in the early years of the church, and she's one of the few members of her family who has officially removed her name from the church records. Her journey from a true blue Mormon to full atheist spans 35 years of small cuts and cracks in her former faith, and she's relied on her sense of humor and optimism to make it through. I am super excited to hear about this process. Stephanie, welcome back. Good to see you.
Hi, guys. I missed you.
I know. We missed you too.
I'm so glad you're here. I have been so excited for your talk. For weeks, I have been excited for this. I cannot wait.
I know. I'm like, oh, okay. I've definitely got the material, but the question is, can I actually manage to fit it in an hour? So that'll be the experiment tonight. We'll find out.
We'll find out.
Yeah, and RFR also gets bragging rights. You guys get to have me first before any other podcast YouTuber in this kind of circle. So you're welcome.
Thank you. You heard it here first. Well, we are so glad to have you. I have missed seeing you every week in the hangout, so this is going to be great to get to catch up with you and hear about everything that's been going on in more detail. So please, by all means, take it away.
Definitely. So like I said, hardest part to do this is trying to figure out 35 years of all of these cuts, all of these cracks, all of these little tiny pieces, and putting them into that much time. So in the wise words of Inigo Montoya, not those ones, but the other ones. Oh, I better actually do something really quick, because that paused it, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we did. Yeah, we probably want to reshare your screen.
There we go.
All right. There we go. Okay. We can see it.
Okay, so these are the words that I wanted. Now the poles in my way. There we go. Now I see why Rob struggles with this silly thing.
The struggle is real. It's always worse when it's live. There's so many little boxes. We have faith in you.
But yeah, you guys see that okay?
Yes. And if you could read it for our audience members who are listening to the audio, that would be super helpful.
Absolutely. So yeah, in the wise words, at one point he is trying to explain to Wesley, who has been mostly dead and is resurrected by a miracle man, which is probably one of the reasons that Mormons my generation love the Princess Bride. He says, let me explain. No, there's too much. Let me sum up. So that's the words I'm going to live by so I don't get too far into the weeds on this whole thing. So the first thing we usually start with is the whole coming out story. So I'm going to start there first, even though it's kind of starting at the end, sort of. But I believe in time lords, so I can get away with that. So when I was ready to be done with Mormonism, there was one person I wanted to tell first, and that was my mom. So in the records of the church, there's something unique about Mormonism for the people who aren't familiar with it. When you're sealed to somebody in your family It means that you get to be with them for eternity. You are linked to them. And so it's something that's very important. That's one of the reasons why they say families can be together forever. That's why it's such a big deal if someone falls away, because there's a high risk that you might not necessarily lose them, but they won't get to visit you. If they go too far, they're lost. So that was the hardest part. That was the final piece that I had to get past. So this was actually the first time that I decided to find some kind of way to help me get through this hurdle. So I'd found RFR site. I contacted the headline. I was given great advice on how to approach talking with my mom, and I was invited to the community Slack group. Highly recommend it. And I called her in a video chat, which was the safest way I could think of, because if anything got heated, I could just let her know, you know, I'll talk with you later, and then just end it and not have to try and run away in the car or get too awkward. She was surprisingly calm and gentle about it, which my mom is, she's kind of where I get my loud streak. I practice from her example. So I will be forever grateful to her for that. She thought I was leaving because of the stances that the church had taken on LGBTQ plus issues. At that time, there was a lot of activity that I'd been involved in. That was one of the more higher profile things that I was vocal on, so I get it. I explained to her that it was that and more over the last 20 years. I'd given it so much time hoping that the conflict would ease up or repair itself, but it was still there in me. I told her I experienced some things I couldn't declare simple coincidence, but they were more universal and not just part of Mormonism. My favorite part was her reaction. She said, "Don't you have the rest of your life to make such a major decision?" And if you know my story, you know I had to fight a giggle fit because, well, I told her, you know, that's true. Except a year ago, that decision was nearly taken away from me. So to go back, in March 2021, I experienced two cardiac arrests and a seizure in 24 hours from each other due to complications from three chemo treatments, and colon cancer did not do well with me, basically. Medically, I beat the odds twice and should be dead. Many people go through that and dive right back into religion. For me, it had the opposite effect. Subconsciously, I found myself going down a rabbit hole of philosophy, science, and how the world in general works, just as kind of comfort food while I was recovering. And thanks to my therapist at the time, I was able to realize what the rabbit hole was leading to. My near-death experience accelerated what had been a slow burn for decades. My mom asked me what I thought removing my name from the records of the church would accomplish. Again, very kindly, and I love her to pieces for that. She already knew I recently read that Marie Kondo book. I got bored, and it led to a decluttering process in my home. During the video chat, I told her about finding the official associate's degree I received when I graduated from a now defunct and predatory tech school back in 2005. That paper has zero value to me, and I'm still considering what kind of ritual to discard it with. I told her, in the same way that that paper has no meaning to me, my membership in the church also does not spark joy. And I left it at that. It was a good 30-minute conversation. I let her know that my ceiling to her is not what I personally consider an ultimate connection to her or to any other family or friends who've been in our lives. And she understands why I want to pick and choose who knows who I've left, but she won't discuss anything church-related with me. I've tried, and there's an immediate wall that comes up. I'm hoping that that changes in the future, but we'll see. I still have some optimism, but we'll find out if that works.
Man, it sounds like you've really been taking this very thoughtfully, though, in terms of planning out your conversations and really thinking through what you're going to say. That is really impressive. I have to tell you, I work here. Okay, I volunteer here. And your way of handling these conversations have been a lot better than a lot of mine with my family members. So I just wanted to say I'm super impressed. I feel like you're doing a great job. And it sounds like your mom still, you know, you have that good connection with her. So I'm glad to hear that. Wonderful. Okay. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow there, but I just wanted to say that.
You're good. But yeah, this slide that I've got here, which, by the way, the blue background, that's the texture used on the blue Book of Mormons that get printed out. So if you know why that's perfect for this. But this slide, it's got a bunch of my journal's entries specifically from this prompt book that I had. And this is when I was 14. These were my answers when I was 14 years old. I'm happy to kind of read those later. If we've got time, totally up for it. They're fascinating. I found a whole bunch of them. I ended up tossing them after taking pictures of the individual pages so that I could, and that was the Marie Kondo week. But they're there. They're fascinating to go back over 20 years and find out what I was thinking. But 14-year-old me was peak good LDS girl, Stephanie. Like, that was, if we're talking vintage, that's the one.
So how does that make you feel rereading those in the OWL?
They're fascinating. There was one page that I winced a bit. It was talking about things that I dislike. The one up at the top corner was, make a list of things you dislike about your mother. I put, she swears she doesn't live up to the teachings of a church that she believes in. And my mom fluctuated too. She was actually a good example for me to be able to understand that people are not rigid. They can fluctuate throughout their lives. So she was a great example for me. At this time, she was definitely in what people would call her more rebellious phases. And again, peak good LDS me was like, I hate that. Why can't she just be the one that, like, I know that she's taught to be? So that was kind of that was rough to see, because I love my mom to pieces, and it just, I know if she saw this entry, it would hurt. So, but she knows how I felt at the time.
I was gonna say, that is kind of a tough question. Was that in like an official church activity?
This was one of those chicken soup for the teenage soul books that my mom found for me one day, and I just had some interesting pages. But right next to that, it says, make a list of things you love and appreciate about your mother. And I put, she has gone through many marriages, raised up to 4 kids on a beautician's salary, and still finds time to be with us and be happy. So I appreciated the juxtaposition that the book gave, because I'm like, oh, that hurts. Why did I say that? But then I'm like, okay, yeah, there was still some good patience. but yeah, when it, As far as Mormonism in general goes, there have been plenty of times where the hangouts would cause me to realize how weird my childhood religion really is. It's like a foreign language to most people, and the first language I learned. So I would mention one thing, like why I don't drink alcohol until I was nearly 22 and about to leave Phoenix to move back home to Utah. And then it's an explanation of where the Word of Wisdom comes from and why it's practiced typically than when it was first issued. So I'm going to hold off on those kind of questions until the very, very, very end. And just, I've got a list that I've put together of some of the big ones that help already answer those. A lot of people have already done those answers, and some cases done them far well that I can. That first link is actually one of my favorites. It broke Sasha, that RFRX talk that they did with Bryce Blankenagel and Sharon, one of his other co-hosts. It's entertaining. It went on for an extra hour. But yeah, at the end of it, Sasha's brain, you could see it was leaking out of his ear. So it was so much fun to go through and figure out what they had already talked about in that one. But yeah, if there's something you're curious on, again, feel free to put it in the chats on the questions. I'm happy to go through it later. But for the sake of time. Now, the fun part, of course, if there's one thing that Rob taught me, it's the no true Scotsman fallacy. So, of course, there's all these people who are like, well, you were never actually a good Mormon. You weren't actually really LDS. No, we're going to put that to rest right here, right now. So, how Mormon was I? This is where, oh, by the way, we're going to play a game. Helen, were you going to be the dice roller?
Yes.
Zakara. Okay, so we got, what do we got? Five different pieces. I need you to roll five-sided dice for me.
Okay.
Which one are we doing?
Give me 1 second.
I don't know if this has ever happened this way, but.
Okay.
Oh, we love games on here. This will be fun.
4.
I got 4. Okay. So this one, number 4, a medallion is a girl's best friend. So I completed, again, peak 14-year-old me. I completed enough of what was called the personal progress tasks, which is something for teenage girls to practice all of these skills that would get them ready to become a woman. And I'd earned enough to earn the Beehive Medallion, which was a big deal. That's that little one that has the praying girl. I was super excited when I got that one. And I also, while some girls would doodle like a boy's name or their favorite band or something like that in their little homework binders, I would doodle the little Young Women's Torch logo, which I still love this logo. It's beautifully designed. It's got like a torch handle, and then it's got like a side profile of a girl, and then the flames are kind of like breaking up where her hair goes, and the front is her face. It's really cool. If you ever get a chance and you're curious, like fascinated by logos, this probably is one of the ones that got me into wanting to design logos. So thinking back on it. And one of my, of course, Young Women's is one of my favorite things ever. And I bet I can still quote the Young Women's theme that we would say every Sunday. It's been modified a little, but if you know it, feel free to test me. Feel free to Google it if you really want to see this later. Let's see here. We believe we are daughters of our Heavenly Father who loves us, and we love Him. We will strive to live as witnesses of the gospel at all times and in all things and in all places. Oh, there's a sentence I forgot. Dang it. Okay. I knew I would get close. And then, but we will follow the virtues, which are faith, divine nature, individual worth, knowledge, choice and value, accountability, good works, and integrity. I still definitely know those. There's, I think, another one that got added after that. We believe as we strive to live these values, we will be worthy to return to our Heavenly Father. It, I used to know every single word, but yeah, it's still at least 50% of it still stuck in the back of my head. Cannot get rid of it.
But that early indoctrination gets you.
Yeah, it's there. It's real. Like I've seen ex-Mormons who 40 years later can still remember hymns that they haven't seen for like decades. It's indoctrination is real, you guys. It's, but yeah, that was me, like 14-year-old me loved everything about Mormonism. And I had my motives, for sure.
Now, quick question. Was that called the Beehive Medallion?
Yeah, so the 12 through 13 year olds, 12, 13, and 14 year olds, that age range, they were called the Beehives, which, of course, it's Utah, which is the Deseret area. The bees were one of our big symbols that we took on. That's where that came from. So, yeah, again, the Mormons will know. The members of the Church of Latter-day Saint will know.
Okay, and not to take you off track at all, so stop me if this is going to be a long story, but okay. Why, excuse me, sorry, why is it the Church of Latter-day Saints rather than Mormons? I think people have mentioned before, it may have been you who originally mentioned this to me, that some members of the church actually do not like the term Mormon and don't consider that to be an accurate term to use. Is that the case?
Yeah, and it's fascinating because now that I've been digging through the official history, mm-hmm. I saw, when was it, 19, Bryce would know right off the top of his head, 1836, 37, they were called the Church of Christ or the Community of Christ or something along those lines. But then there was another group about the same time that was throwing a fit because, no, that's our name. And it got modified to say the Church of Jesus Christ. And then it got modified again later to say the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And then it fluctuated in like about my generation. And even back then, like Joseph Smith himself would call the people the Mormons. Like it was a common name. It wasn't always an insult. If you were against the church, it definitely was an insult. But even back then, they called themselves the Mormons. It was just like you would call like the Calvinites, the Calvinites. It was a common thing to just tie on whoever started that movement. It would just show up with that name. So it's politics on why there's a big deal about it lately. And I actually have something later that might, depending on the game, might touch on that. So we'll find out.
Excellent.
It's a choose your own talk.
All right. If we play our cards right, we'll get this question answered.
Okay, so next game. One thing that I loved about growing up as a Mormon kid was all of the media, the music, the movies, like the books. We had everything, especially living in Utah. It was easy access everywhere. And I was saturated in it. So we're going to do another dice roll. We got four different options. Which one are we doing?
I got you, girl. Hold on.
Please roll
four
a four.
Again. Four
yes!
Again.
Yes.
All right. If we get another four, I've been seeing that fours lately. So no, I'm not into numerology. It's just funny to me. So four. We had fan fiction, which
there's Mormon fan fiction.
Oh yes. Oh yes, oh. There is Mormon fan fiction.
I love it.
I need to know everything about this.
Yeah, now I have to know.
Okay, so yeah, there was of course, even my whole life I've been a bookworm. The Stephen King one is just a symptom of that. Like, it's my current drug. But I've always, always, always had an insatiable appetite for books. I would read anything I can get my hands on. And so thankfully we had a lot of church influence and church friendly and church approved options for me. I have read every volume of the Work in the Glory series, which is one that was created to kind of cover the early church history. And I think I'd have to double check the dates, but it basically covers the first 15, 20 years worth of history, or so I thought. This was pretty much based off of all of the church written history that we had access to, a lot of the journals of all of the ancestors that we had. It was based on, from what I knew, as much fact as possible, but it had fictional characters, thus kind of a fan fiction. And so I thought it was real. Anytime someone would talk to me about church history, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that part in the book. And I would bring up that passage and thought I knew what I was talking about. Another fun part, it also was part of the music, but there was this, a book that went with it where that's called The Forgotten Carols. And it kind of had this idea of, okay, we've got all of these other Christmas carols and they all have stories behind them. But what about the carols that everybody else doesn't know? But were also about stories about people who were there. And that's what the Forgotten Carols were. The book itself was one of my favorite things that we had a copy of, because I could also play the music on the CD that we had and read along with it. And it was a big deal when I got to actually go to the musical and see it in person. I still, like, some of those songs will still make me cry. And just getting to sing along with them was, still is, one of my favorite things to do. Even though I no longer believe anything of it. But the cool part of the book is it would have full fleshed out stories to go with each of these songs and an explanation on what was going on with the songs. Like, it had characters that this guy was telling the one character, well, this song is from this person I talked to. And it's really fun. If you ever get curious, just on a storytelling basis, it's fun on its own. But the other fun part was the Tennis Shoes Among the Nephites books. I had every copy. I even had a few signed copies from when the author did a fireside. I was so excited. I grabbed my grandma's copies and brought her so I could get her signed too. But this was, again, more fan fiction based on the characters in the Book of Mormon, and a teenager gets sucked back, kind of like a kid in King Arthur's court style, and interacts with the Nephites and Lamanites back then along the Book of Mormon stories. And okay, it was wait. So cool to me.
I'm trying to piece it together.
Yeah, same. I think you've got the same question I do. Like, who are the Nephites? Did I miss that?
So the Book of Mormon short version is the Jews back 600 years BC that made it over to the Americas and fought between each other and all of their ancestors up through like 350 AD. I could be wrong on that last date, but yeah, so like 1,000 years or so. Oh, and then you also have to go before they were right from the 600. There's like 1,000 years of history in the Americas involving the Jews that showed up.
Okay.
The main tribes were the Nephites and Lamanites.
Got it. So okay. So here's the question I need to know the answer to. In these fanfics, do the characters like get together and date and stuff? Like, I know they're probably not hooking up because it's for
there's probably Mormon porn out there, Kara.
I mean, like, that's what I'm wondering. Like, how deep does this go with the fan fiction?
There are some and that's why it's kind of fun, because there are some interactions. I definitely remember Work of the Glory, where the fictional characters interacted with Joseph Smith and a lot of the other leaders, and there was some drama. There were also some characters that were the anti-Mormons who were part of the mob. Like, that was why it was fascinating to me, because I could also look at it in a way as historical fiction. But yeah, there were definitely some where, for fun, the author took some liberties and had some interactions with these historic characters. So, but yeah, there was some romance. It was all like, you know, very PG or lower, so nothing super crazy.
Love it.
But yeah, I think it, one of the other weird ones, my grandma had a series where they were romances, like geared towards adults, but I'd read all the kid books, and so she knew I could handle, and they were still, again, like church approved level. There was nothing racy about them, but they were romance novels where they were a husband and wife who met each other. They were spies, they worked with Interpol, and they happened to find out about the LDS Church, became baptized, and it's about their exploits.
Serious.
I'm serious. It was one of my favorites.
I like, there's a part of me that wants to read this damn book, but there's another part of me that I'll regret it. So,
I know you're kind of selling this to me.
I'm really afraid to go back and read them. I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I doing?
Because you mentioned spies, and then like they're working for Interpol, and I'm like, cool, mystery, intrigue, blah, blah, blah. And then you mentioned getting baptized into the Mormon church. And I'm like, how does that story get interwoven?
It worked. They had something to do with Salt Lake. And I can't remember the details. I think they got mobbed by the missionaries. And like, I don't know, the spirit, like the Holy Ghost.
I'm gonna, to I'll just read a book synopsis. I'll just do that. But so you mentioned that somebody mentioned earlier, it was Kara, that Mormons don't like to be called Mormon. Where did the word Mormon come from?
So it's primarily the Book of Mormon. That was the one book that made this whole group stick out.
Okay.
And the name Mormon is basically the guy who compiled all of the stories into one book. And he writes his own little chapter, and it's kind of like the Bible, how there are different kind of authors, like they're broken apart by different authors, basically like Book of Job, Ruth, like Matthew, Mark, Luke, same kind of thing. It follows the same kind of little divisions. So Mormon is just one of the guys who put together all of these other books into a condensed version to save for later. That's where the name comes from.
Oh, okay.
Nothing super crazy. We don't worship him. I still say we. It's still there.
It's never going to go away.
It's just,
I'm not Catholic
to start
anymore,
using
and I still
new
say
pronouns.
Yeah.
We can do it.
It's only been a few months, you guys. It's only been a few months. I'm going to get there. But yeah, so that one, and like I said, that's one that there's a whole, that's a whole other episode that can go into that one question. It's a fascinating religion. I'm still digging into it, and that's one thing I love about growing up LDS is I come from a fascinating group that has just a treasure trove of information that I can do a deep dive for hours.
Yeah, I'm gonna say we might need to have an episode on just the fan fiction.
Do a whole series of weird religion fan fiction.
Okay, we're doing
report.
This.
I'm going to look up Catholic fan fiction.
Yeah,
there's got to be some. Well, you
I'm doing
got,
a deep dive.
What is it? You've got the Dan Brown books, don't you?
I mean, I don't know that I would consider those religious, but, you know.
There's definitely some out there. I'm sure of it. Okay, so let's see here. Now, the next chunk is the family dynamics that normally people go into, but this, we gotta keep this short. I joke around that watching Jerry Springer as a kid, like, because they'll get millennial kids on sick days, it just happened. Even for the Good Mormon kids, it just happened. We knew about Jerry. And he made my family feel normal. You've heard me probably describe myself as an only child out of 9 kids. And maybe if we got enough time, we can go into detail on that. But for now, I'll save that for the hangout to kind of keep identity safe. We'll leave it at that for now. But the basics to understand for my family is, it's enough to understand that it wasn't the family the LDS Church portrays as one that would be worthy of the highest level of heaven. That was the dynamic that I constantly had for my whole life. So long as you understand that, then the rest will make a lot more sense. So, oh, by the way, it's this fantastic Jerry Springer meme for those who can't see. But yeah, Jerry would be proud of me, I think. But rest in peace to the man. He's only been gone a short time, but yeah, it's a picture of Squidward tearing up with one of the great memes from us millennial kids that just renew. So thank you, Jerry. Now we got another fun game. Okay, we got four? Five. We got five this time. Okay, so roll me. Five-sided die. What do I get?
Hold on. I gotta switch screens.
So I love the title of the five. Slide. One of these things is not like the other. We used to sing that from the Sesame Street song. That's where that came from.
It's not four, it's five.
It's not four? Next time. One of the other podcasts. We'll see if that shows up.
Okay.
You can come back here again.
Deal. Ooh. We'll see if we can get any different roles. Or I'll just do that on the book club. The fan fiction episode.
We're doing this fan fiction episode. It's going to happen.
It better be. Yes.
So we got number five, so one of the other options on How Mormon Was I was called How to Make Friends. This is on the other one. Yeah, one of these options is How to Make Friends and Avoid Being Nice to the Rest of the Kids. So number five is How to Make Friends with the Rest of the Kids. So this one, some of you might have actually heard this story. This is one of the big, like when the cracks start, this is one of the big moments. A lot of them happened during high school for me. But this one, it was 10th grade. And if you know anything about early 2000s, especially 2002, you know it is the renaissance of nu metal and pop punk rock. So we had bands like Linkin Park, we had The Offspring, System of a Down, we had all of those guys were on repeat on my headphones as I walked through the halls in high school and walked to and home from home. And when I was at my friend's house and we waited for 2 hours for a song to download on LimeWire, like that was what we were looking for, was that stuff. So that was also when I heard rumors of a band called Deftones, and then from there it was game over for me. In fact, I got a surprise to show you later.
All good bands, now, I approve.
Yes, they're so good. And it's really funny, like another whole thing was, how did I go from the good choir girl to System of a Down? That's a whole other, again, 35 years, guys. So, but yeah, time jump to 10th grade. And I definitely would have been considering violating the rules set out for the youth in our church regarding music. My social circles were also less approved than before. They were full of misfits and outcasts who were somehow decent people and not the bad influences I've been told about. Weird. I was still enrolled in the seminary class because, one, it was interesting to me. Like I said, it's a fascinating religion that's always been interesting. And so now I've got seminary classes, which are kind of like a free period where you can go offsite on the school in Utah. And it's like Sunday school, only just for the teenagers in your age. It's cool. Or it seemed cool to me, but I don't know. It still was fun. Like it was my little anchor as a Good Mormon girl. It was still there. That was my little piece. Now, I'd been, of course, also taught that church education was just as important as your other scholastic topics. So I had that still, that drive of, this is what I got to do to make sure that I'm going to be okay with my family forever, that I'm not going to lose them. So it was just one other thing that I'm like, I got to do this. I wasn't forced. It was totally voluntary, but there were still motivations that weren't entirely my own. Now, one day, I noticed that a new kid would start sitting in classes with us. I don't know if he was enrolled because it was technically a free period. He wasn't required to be there. But he definitely stood out. He had long hair. He had a bandana that was always worn across his forehead, and usually wore camo pants that typically matched his bandana. He stood out for sure. And but he seemed like a lot of my other very eclectic friends. And so I talked with him one day before class started, learned that he was a fan of System of a Down, but hadn't heard the newest album that just came out. So nobody else was in there. And this is, again, this is not something that I had this thought like, oh, you should totally do this. No, this was, I'd seen other kids in my class before and after class would start. They put in one of their own CDs, and it was usually something like, I don't know, Weird Al, I think, was the wildest it ever got. They usually had something like the Steamroller. Oh my gosh, what's their name? Not Sondheim Steamroller. They do all the Christmas songs with all the guitars, and it's super epic.
Oh, the
Yeah. Right? Yes. Okay. Yeah, that was big with the Mormon kids was Mannheim Steamroller.
Okay, yeah. I was on the Trans-Siberian. That's the one I'm familiar with.
Them too. Yeah, that was so. But yeah, again, like that was the stuff that I'd seen before. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, it's not officially class time. It's shouldn't be that big of a deal. So I just took out my copy of the new System of a Down CD, put it in really quick, and just played the first track, which has the best beginning to an album, in my personal opinion. Every single time it gets me. And he loved it. We bonded like cat from then on. Best friends. So, and it was just the one song. Stopped it. We hung out. Class started. No big deal. But later, as I was going back to one of my other classes, I crossed paths with one of my old friends from, they're back in fifth grade. One of the oldest friends I had. I thought I had. This was huge to me because he, as we passed, he said that he couldn't talk with someone evil like me, who was influenced by Satan, who brought the deceiver into our seminary building with my choice of music.
Wow, and that escalated quickly.
That did. Like, wow.
It knocked the wind out of me. I couldn't. It was like I'd gotten punched in the gut. Like, you hear people say that phrase, but like, I couldn't talk even. It stunned me. Cause this guy, he was such a nice guy for this whole time. Like, and he'd always seemed like one of those good guys that just seemed like that was just his nature to be a good guy. But I realized, no, that he was just acting the way that the church had told him to. And this took a long time for me to figure out. But like my group of friends, we were every single group. I'm not bragging when I say that I was kind of the common denominator with all of these different types of kids. You'd had your cliques, of course, but usually I was the one that all these groups had in common. And so we'd have like an entire, we take up three or four tables in the cafeteria at breakfast and lunch just about every day. And if you were an outsider, you'd look at us and be like, okay, how does that work? And that was one thing that I saw. And we had some, like some of my really close friends in this group were the good Mormon kids. They were the super good ones. They were the ones that went to church. They were the ones that went to seminary. They were doing all the stuff that I was supposed to be doing, but they were still my friend. But they were actually being kind, and they weren't just doing it because the church told them that they had to, which was why they were there. Like, everybody had an open invitation to be part of our friends, but there were few of the good Mormon kids that actually took us up on that. So when my old longtime friend did this, it hurt deep, but it was one of the first ones where I'm like, that was weird. But I had enough friends that I had enough of a social group to fall back on, and I was okay. Like, I could take it. It wasn't the first time I had that kind of attitude towards people, but it was the one that hurt the deepest, for sure. So, and I promise, it says laughing loudly, but there's definitely some rough stuff that I gotta go over.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense that there would be. You probably wouldn't have left the faith otherwise if it was comfortable.
If it was all sunshine and rainbows, like, yeah, it'd still be there. No problem.
Yeah.
This is reality. This is honesty. I'm not going to pretend and say, oh, yeah, I'm totally leaving for some other reason. What happened.
I think those of us that have left religion is finding that balance between, like, the good memories and the bullshit that happens, you know, like the remembering the good moments and the friendships and, you know, forming those relationships, even though it's through religion, but also recognize that, you know, in some ways it kind of fucked us up and we have to work through that shit. So,
yeah. And that's what's been so cathartic about, like, just this talk alone, like, oh yeah, these were the big, I've made lists like this before, over the last year or so, but seeing it all compressed into one spot, I'm like, yeah, I know that makes a lot of sense now. Okay, so the next piece. I'm not looking at the chat, but I'm hoping that there are enough people that recognize who this beautiful man is. For those who can't see, this is a picture of Tyler the Creator for his earthquake video. If you know, you know why this is great. If you don't, I highly recommend going to watch this music video. It's called Earthquake. It's great. I love it. But yeah, so the next part, it's, if there's cracks that lead to all of this, this one was earthquake level that I've got to go into. There's no option. This one is one that cannot be avoided. And it's rough, so kind of strap in. We'll get there. Promise. There'll be some good that comes out of it. So it's key because it covers so much of the disconnect I was dealing with between reality and being raised in the LDS church. And so 7th grade through 11th grade were unusual in one big way. And it was the most stable point in my life socially because my mom managed to keep us in the same schools. Like, when I was proud of her for being a beautician and managing to keep us all together, it also meant that we had to move around a lot. So this was a huge deal. This was the first time I'd been able to actually build friendships and ones that would last more than a year or two. So someone's gonna call me a liar, I'm sure of it. But I am naturally shy and have severe social anxiety. I know you don't believe me, but I have witnesses I can come up and give testimony to. But this is one of the reasons. Being able to actually build all of these groups helped me practice breaking out of that. So what you see now, this is years of practice that started in 6th grade. And it's to the point where one of my family members is convinced I have autism because there's so many similarities, but I got screened and they confirmed it's just social anxiety. So, cause I got worried. I'm like, maybe that's what it is. No, it's just, I get awkward. I get anxious. I get terrified to talk. So without all this practice, this couldn't happen.
Well, I can definitely relate to that. Do you feel like that was something that you kind of got trained to do or to feel as part of your religious upbringing? I know sometimes there's kind of a gendered aspect to that in terms of how people are sort of taught to socialize. Do you think that affected it at all?
I think so. And I think that that's also why there's especially in our culture, a lot of females, because we're already told, you know, be the quieter one, be the subservient one, like, don't, you're not supposed to be as, like, strong and given chances for leadership like the guys are. So, like, when you've got a male LDS person who's presenting with autism, it's a lot more obvious because they're already breaking a lot of social norms. But I was breaking social norms just by learning how to be louder. And there were a lot of other things that happened where I broke a lot of these rules and expectations because I was trying to fight against this anxiety. I knew that something was wrong with me that way. And to me, it was, I guess on a subconscious level, I thought it was more important that I break those rules than deal with the depression and anxiety that I was living with my whole life as a kid. It seemed the better of the two routes, and I'm pretty sure that's part of what drove it. But yeah, definitely there's a lot of overlap with social anxiety, autism, depression. It's all there for sure.
So is there, like, within the church, is there an acceptance of people that, you know, are on the spectrum or have ADHD, especially kids, you know, when they're growing up and going to school, like those things will start to manifest? Is the church okay with that? Or do they say, like, you know, with other religions, like your kid has demons and you need to pray them away. And then if you pray them away, he's not going to be autistic anymore. You know, that type of shit.
It's gotten a bit better. And again, like, mental illness and neurodivergence is definitely something, a deep dive on Mormonism alone, mm-hmm. that easily I've done a little bit of digging while I was going through the screening, 'cause I did get curious. The short answer, there are still some people who are convinced that if you have depression, it's because you have some kind of sin you're not repenting of, especially if you're a female. And then it's specifically some kind of sexual sin that you are not repenting of, even if you're not sexually active or flirting at all. So yay.
Oh, okay. Else. Well, I just thought I had a chemical balance in my brain that I needed to take medication for. But apparently I, as a queer person, I have sexual sin I need to deal with.
Oh, as a queer person, absolutely you do. That's
Yeah.
And that's actually what we're about to get into.
I'm just gonna go off the Wellbutrin now.
We're kind of, yeah. Oh, you're fixed, Helen.
I'm all fixed now.
We've prayed it away.
Wellbutrin works for me, dude. I am so excited. I've been on it for like a month and I love it. But yeah. Backfired on my mom, but that's a whole other fun part. But yeah, it's, 16-year-old me by now, super excited because none of my new friends know I have social anxiety because I'm that good at it now. And like I said, we take over all the school breakfast and lunch tables. We're loud. Like, I'm the big social butterfly. My mom's trying to figure out what happened because she's so impressed that I'm now more like her socially. Now, one other thing, of course, that happens with 16-year-old LDS kids is you pass a magical point where you can date. And I knew I was finally old enough to date. I hadn't dated anybody to this point. But even a magic eight ball was going to tell me the odds of a good Mormon boy asking me on a date were not good. So I'm also like the icebox from Little Giants. I don't get crushes. Go look it up. If you haven't seen that movie, go look it up.
That
the
is
icebox
a great
made
reference.
Me feel normal. You know it. I knew somebody would know it.
I love the icebox. She's great.
But yeah, watching that movie as a kid, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And watching her as a teenager, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, she made a lot of sense to me. Now, when I do develop a good crush on one of my best friends, he's also LDS. He also has a good LDS family. He happens to be dating a good LDS girl. And I try not to get my hopes up. So one day, we're passing around notes in choir class, which was, again, full of good Mormon youth because we're so used to singing at least four songs on Sunday. And he writes that he's got a secret, but he's afraid of what I'll say. So after school, I coax it out of him, and it shatters everything. He's gay. He's been chatting with a guy in another state who's coming to visit him soon, and he doesn't know who else he can talk to about it. I didn't talk to him for 3 days. He was heartbroken. He begged me to talk with him, saying he could take it back if he wanted to, and he'd tell me whatever I wanted to hear as long as I'd still be his best friend. Like, so I did. I told him, "You let me think I had a chance with you, and let me develop a crush on you. I know it's never happening." And I remember him smiling a little and saying, "Oh, sweetie, I'm sorry. I thought you were mad at me because now you know my secrets." And I'm like, "No, it's okay." And rest like that, we're best friends again. And so now I find out I'm the first person that he's talked to about it. And he wants to tell his parents, but he's afraid that he'll get a really bad reaction from them, which is why he was really terrified about my reaction. So we put together a game plan. We go to his house. I drive, and he just asks me, just wait in the car while I go inside and tell my parents. And I'm like, "No worries. I'll be right here if you need me." So I'm waiting. I can't remember how much time actually went by, but eventually he comes back out and he's sobbing, he's shaking, he gets in the car, and he tells me that his parents told him if he continues to date this guy or any other boy, they will kick him out. And I broke. I couldn't reconcile the two issues. There was this idea that an LDS family always prioritizes the happiness and love for each other. They are the safe haven from the world's trials. The stories I've heard of parents who do abandon and abuse on their kids are not LDS people. And they're like that because they're not LDS. They don't have that good truth that builds that happiness that keeps them together. Oh, yeah, here it was. Two righteous LDS parents that I personally knew were righteous LDS parents threatening their teenage son with homelessness. And he hadn't done anything wrong. So I couldn't, it was huge. I've been trying to understand why it was such a shock. He wasn't the first friend that I had who was gay. That was what bothered me. The vitriol that the church had been saying regarding gay people hadn't sunk into me since it was all about protecting the family, and my family was already abnormal. So I didn't have one that needed protecting like the other LDS families did. I've recently been going back through old church talks and interviews with LDS leaders, and now I see the church's stance was obvious to an outsider, but it wasn't something that was discussed with the kids or teenagers during church. The only messaging we were getting was for the girls to prepare to marry a righteous priesthood holder and the guys to prepare to be a righteous priesthood holder. That was about it. There wasn't any kind of don't get emotionally attached in a romantic way to someone of the same gender as you, because that's horrible. It wasn't like that for people that were under 18. We didn't get that message. All of the adults were aware, but I had no clue, so that's why it blindsided me so badly to see him treated like this.
Wow, that's interesting. So are there, Oh, that's really different than my experience. I'm really curious now. So why is it that the adults and the kids have such different teachings on this issue? Is it one of those things that's kind of unwritten in the texts, but is understood to be some kind of attitude that you're supposed to have? Or are there certain interpretations or readings of the text that you get at a certain age? Like, how is that happening, that the messaging is so different?
It's essentially the same reason why they preach abstinence only, why they don't even bring up sex with kids, even in like ways that are safe to talk with younger kids. Anytime it's brought up with teenagers, it's, you know, avoid heavy petting, it avoid like getting too close when it comes to kissing. Definitely had the purity culture. That kind of, that's what we had, is that we had that purity level. Like,
So it's basically, it wasn't, don't talk about it, don't think about it, don't do it, yeah, and everything will be fine.
It wasn't brought up because then you're thinking about it. And now we have to explain it. And now we have to explain why we believe that.
Don't think about it, so you're going to think about it all the time. That's the problem. If you tell someone not to think about something, that's all they think about. And then add the shame to it, add that you're going to be ostracized, add that to it, it's then that's all you're thinking about. It's like, I don't fit in. I'm not right. So I have to navigate the system so I will be loved and accepted, which is gross and terrible. And so the person is going to obsess over it because we're going against their nature and who they are.
Yeah, it was.
That type of shit pisses me off so bad. It's
still
so gross. Yeah, it's so gross.
Yeah. And now, like, now that I've had like decades of distance and being able to step back and actually break down and kind of do like an autopsy, like a scientific level of actually taking apart the dead tissue and figuring out, oh, that's where this came from. I see it now, but yeah, 16-year-old me, I had no clue that that's what was going on outside of the bubble that I was protected in. It just never came up. And for other reasons, I wasn't around my dad's family as much, which they're the heavy LDS influence. That's all of like the diehard pioneer ancestors that start from the beginning. I hadn't been around them. So if they were talking about it, it wasn't reaching me. So it just, all the other pieces I was seeing, I had no idea. So when it hit hard. And so on this slide, that's that's why I've got that Everything Everywhere All at Once scene where it first splits and you see like two or three different scenes overlapped at the same time. She's trying to figure out what it is. That's the closest I can find as far as an image on how that felt. So, and it's also a really good movie. Even if you haven't watched it and you need to watch it in pieces, go watch it. I promise it's really fun. But
I like that we're getting great movie references in this episode.
It's an amazing movie. It's so good. I had lots of feelings and it was amazing. But like, this isn't really a spoiler, but like, I think the major lesson in the movie was compassion. That was a major theme that I found in that movie. So, you know, that's what I appreciated about it. That's what I took away from it.
There's a video I watched. Someone did a breakdown on the dad in that movie. I'll show it to you guys later.
Okay, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in the hangout.
Yeah, okay. Get back on track.
Okay, we're going to play another game. So this time, I actually got a... Yes, we're going to go to this one. So we got four options. I need you to roll a four-sided die for me, which I have. I have a lot of them. So yeah, if that was an earthquake, we're dealing with aftershocks now.
I said one. I said one, and I didn't realize my mic wasn't on.
Oh, you got one?
So one.
Okay. So number one is Mormons telling their stories spreads false concepts. Now, there were a lot of things that helped me hang on. I became active and inactive. There was a time I was just living in Phoenix, just trying to survive. Church wasn't even on my plate. I was the only person I knew out there for like 3 years. So being LDS kind of took a back burner so that I wasn't homeless, essentially. And I don't remember the specific reason that I started going to church again in about 2013. But I do know at the time I was convinced that I could be part of the influence that changed hearts, which would eventually show our Heavenly Father that his people were ready for the church to change policy after receiving a revelation, specifically on things like LGBT people and women's rights and all of that. I learned about the 1978 revelation regarding all men could now have the priesthood regardless of their skin color. Like, I just heard about that. I'm like, oh, history's repeating itself. It's time. I can be part of that. So that was my main piece that tied everything together. But I don't remember exactly what got me to that point. But I still had a lot of cognitive dissonance that's built up. And so, and again, there's like 15 some odd years that this has been building. So I'm doing a huge time jump here because we only got an hour or so. So one thing that helped me stay was John DeLynn's Mormon Stories podcast. You've probably heard of them. I have a few times where people have been like, okay, I heard this episode, but I have no clue what these words were. And I'm like, yeah, that happens. They speak Mormonese and that's about it. So if you need a dictionary, it's nice to have. I can write, we should build one. Maybe that should go with the book report day where I bring a Mormon dictionary to go with it. Nobody recommended it to me. There isn't some like evil anti-Mormon person that's trying to spread this to me. It showed up in my recommended shows list. I was working at a point where I was constantly in a car. If I wasn't in the car, I was taking pictures of houses. And so I had something always in my ear. And typically it was a podcast. So I can't tell you how many of the long form interviews episodes that he did. And he was one of the more prominent members at that time, trying to just hold space for people dealing with doubts. And for him, it was more than just empathy because it was a community he was part of. He'd been physically inactive in the church since about 2011, but was still a believer. So John would use his clinical and counseling psychology and his education in technology to build this platform where he'd do this podcast. I loved it because he wasn't trying to force people to leave. Some of them were devout believers. Some of them had already left. Some were just thinking about it, but he just would let them tell their stories. And it was the first time where I could just do that and just hear all these other perspectives. And I felt so much less alone. It was a lifeline. Like, I had that. As a reminder, I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one trying to do this. And in the LDS Church, you don't have a one-size-fits-all doctrine. There is a box you're expected to stay in. And some of us would pretend we fit just fine, or we'd bend ourselves in pretzels to fit. And all of John's projects were ultimately resources to help people stay. That was his priority. He wanted people to be able to stay. He'd been investigated himself on three separate occasions where people were trying to get him kicked out of the church. Each time, they didn't learn anything that would justify an excommunication. The fourth time, it happened in 2014. And at this point, him and his wife just they were getting tired of it. They were tired of the invasive nature of it. They sent an email to his bishop, which is the person in charge of each local congregation, by the way, not the same kind of bishop as the other churches. But they sent an email kind of just kindly asking, hey, we don't really want to go through with this. Do you mind just respecting our privacy? We no longer plan on attending unless our kids want to go with us. Love you. Thank you for everything you do. That was the basic nature of the email. The bishop took, would you please no longer consider us members of the ward of the congregation? He took that as a request to no longer be a member at all. And so in February 2015, he was excommunicated on the grounds of spreading false concepts and criticism of church leaders. So when John appealed his excommunication, they used his email as justification to deny the appeal. Now, the people that John had helped through his podcast, that we got the message loud and clear. Voicing our doubts or allowing people to voice their doubts was unacceptable. And funny enough, I don't know how, but I last I checked, as of 2020, John still considers himself an unorthodox Mormon, even though he's no longer a member. He still believes. And yeah, he was one of those moments where if someone that still believes, even after getting kicked out, doesn't stand a chance, what am I going to do when I'm on shaky ground like that? So that was just what, there was a lot that happened that year. And again, there's numbers. So if we got time, we can play a game again later.
Yeah, we got to start wrapping up here in about the next 5 minutes or so. So we can definitely do some games in the hangout.
Okay, there's one other piece then that I have to do. Okay, because if that moment in high school was an earthquake, this was an atomic bomb. At that point, about the same time, I'd been becoming more active with the LGBT groups. It was where I found my voice, my place, my purpose, like I was doing something worthwhile. Again, my testimony is very shaky, but it's there. Now, November 5th, I normally would watch the V for Vendetta movie, but something else happened that year, November 5th, 2015, that I ended up not watching the movie, because instead there was a leak on new church policy on how local leaders were supposed to handle same-sex couples and their kids. I'm going to read it verbatim because it makes me so angry. I have to read it verbatim or I'll go off. So, children living in a same-sex household or with a parent who is bisexual or transgender may not be blessed as babies or baptized until they are 18. Once they reach 18, children may disavow the practice of same-sex cohabitation or marriage and stop living within the household and request to join the church. Those in a same-sex marriage are to be considered apostates. If someone is believed to be acting in an apostate way, it triggers a disciplinary council, which can have different outcomes from counseling to potential loss of membership. Now, one thing that makes this so infuriating, Mormon children are normally blessed as infants and they are baptized around age 8, which in Mormonism, if someone dies before they turn 8, they're guaranteed to reach the highest level of heaven. And this is one of the reasons why kids get rushed to get baptized as soon as they are old enough, because if they die after they're 8, they don't get that benefit. So, understandably, a lot of us are heartbroken. We had an emergency get together where we were trying to figure out how to handle this, even to the point where we had to figure out how to talk with people who were suicidal over it. because this did cost lives. There were people who were so hurt that they thought they no longer now officially have a place in this church. And obviously the church is better off without them. And we did lose people. There were so many people that died, that were excommunicated. There were families broken up. There were teenagers that were justifiably kicked out now. And in April 2019, the church changed its mind, because apparently this was Heavenly Father testing us on if we would handle a very difficult policy and doctrine. And now it was softened so that it was still looked upon as wrong, but not as badly. And there was no apology. There was no acknowledgement of the damage that it did or the lives that were lost. It was just kidding. We didn't mean it all that much.
And this is what really gets me about these kind of policies that are purported to be divinely inspired, and these are the words of the Holy God, is that there's not an opportunity to apologize whenever they do harm. You can't ever say, oh, we're sorry, that was terrible, that harmed people, because then you're admitting that this didn't come from God, or God isn't perfect, or any of the above. And therefore, all these people who are affected by this are just sort of left out high and dry. Oh, well, we changed our mind now. Don't worry about anybody that was affected by it. That's just disgusting. I'm so sorry that that happened.
Yeah, and that was the last time that I ever attended fully voluntarily. I would go on occasion if, like, it was a family function or my kids' grandparents invited us. I tried. I really tried. But it physically hurt. I'd be trying to sing along with the hymns just like I did from my childhood, and my voice would hurt while I was trying to hold back the tears. I had to stop going because I couldn't. It shattered the rest of it. The cognitive dissonance was so, so loud. But that was the last major piece. And there were other pieces that happened later, but definitely the whole Marie Kondo, this membership does not give me joy. And I realized I no longer believed in any kind of God when I was trying to break down what I thought happened during that week after the cardiac arrest, and I technically was dead, and trying to figure out, well, what do I believe happened? Well, wait, what do I actually believe in now? And that's when I came to that realizing I don't believe in anything religious at all or spiritual at all. It's gone. So why keep the membership? And since then, as of May this year, I am no longer a member. And I'm free. And I don't have that dissonance because I know what I know now. And I'm not trying to reconcile anything. And people might not believe me, but I'm happy with it. I'm okay with it. And it's great.
Wow. Well, I believe you. And what a great note to end on. That really did come full circle. I'm so happy for you that you were able to work through that and come to a place where you feel happiness and joy again. My goodness.
By the way, I cry at everything. I've been trying not to, and I knew that.
You're allowed to cry. It's okay.
It's okay. We allow that here.
I should do a drinking game. So now that I'm crying, cheers.
Yes, cheers. And I have follow-up questions for the hangout about that beverage.
Oh, yeah. We got an answer.
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right.
I need to know. But let's go ahead then and move to Q&A, and then we'll wrap up and go to the hangout. I need to know the answer to this burning question. So, okay. So was that about it? I don't want to cut you off too soon. If you're not done, was there anything else, any last minute thoughts you want to add before we do Q&A?
You know, I'm impressed I got that much in an hour. So there's still some chunks for sure. Probably the last piece. Honestly, I chose the topic. I chose the title because my sense of humor has gotten me through. And one of the things I learned, I am very grateful, because while it hurt the whole time knowing I wasn't going to be good enough to attend the temple, to make sure that my family was going to be eternal, I felt like that was my biggest failure my whole life. But now that I've looked into what happens at the temple and what I was going to end up promising to do, oh my gosh, I dodged a bullet, you guys. One of the things I would have had to promise to do is avoid loud laughter.
Can you imagine?
I'd walk out of the temple and I'd be immediately screwed. You're like, dang it, now what?
I don't have a volume control. I need the other people to tell me to be quiet.
I couldn't believe it. I was listening to the thing. I'm like, I have to do what? So I did some digging, and the scriptures that they use to justify it is in Doctrine and Covenants 88, verse 69. It says, remember the great and last promise which I have made unto you. Cast away your idle thoughts and your excess of laughter far from you. And that's why it is in the temple ceremonies. I've heard maybe within the past year they took that part out. But that's still like the majority of my life. I'd be making a vow that I could not keep, which would immediately cast any chance into getting into the best Mormon heaven. Straight up out of luck. So it is a coping mechanism, my laughter. I've had to remind a therapist that it is a coping mechanism after he suggested I try stand-up comedy. I make jokes at some of my darkest moments. When people have asked about, how did you know about this cancer? Like, how did you find out? I tell them my body got bored when everything shut down in March 2020 and decided colon cancer would make things more interesting. So it's just me. I've had so many weird, messed up things that I've had to reconcile. And if I don't laugh about it, I will cry. I will break down, and I'm just in the fetal position the rest of my life, and I can't do that. So my sense of humor has been probably the best part of my life. And if outer darkness, which is more than just hell in Mormonism, it's more like solitary confinement for eternity. If I'm wrong and outer darkness is real, I would rather be there and laughing at how much everybody is going to be missing me. And from what I tell, I'm going to be in really good company, even if I can't see the other inmates. So if you're headed there, I'll see you soon.
I love it. I love it. I love that you didn't let them steal your laughter and your joy. So thank you.
You need to laugh at the absurdity of everything. You know, that's what gets us through the shit.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think that's a great note to wrap up on and go to some questions, because I actually am excited about this question that someone else asked. They're wondering if you would recommend the Marie Kondo book, and I've gotten the sense from this the story that you've told that actually is part of what kind of helped you cut this out of your life.
If there was a bingo card, I would not have expected that to be something I marked off as my reasons for living. So the funny part, I was bored one night. It was, my husband had already fallen asleep. I've always, like I said, I've always been a bookworm. The one way I've always managed to get asleep is to read before I go to bed. Like, that's what I do. And so I didn't want to wake him. And so I was going through the free list of books on my phone, and that came up. I'm like, why not? It's nothing I'm going to get too wrapped up in. Let's see what the hype is about. In some of the first pages where she's mentioning some of her clients' responses and reviews, she includes one where a client said that they got rid of their spouse. They're now divorced, and they were so excited to realize that this person does not bring them joy. So they got rid of that idiot. Like, they were gone. So, yeah. Apparently, that life change is a thing. I don't know how many other people have left their religions because Marie Kondo told them that get rid of anything that does not spark a joy, but it's not that unusual.
Like, she's gonna start deconverting people and she didn't even know.
I don't even know if she knows what Mormonism is.
That's funny.
I honestly kind of want to write to her and be like, hey, guess what? Just to see what happens. But yeah,
I bet she's got a list of letters like that people have written to her about things that they decided to cut out of their lives.
Right. I cut out my husband because he didn't bring me joy.
That was the funniest part. And that was at the beginning of the book. I'm like, okay, maybe this will be interesting. I got rid of like 8 big garbage bags worth of old craft supplies and my religion. Let's go.
Yeah,
highly recommend, even if it's just getting rid of stuff. Still found a lot of value in that book.
Or you might get rid of your religion, who knows?
It might accelerate it, and you might be better off sooner, like me.
Amazing. Okay, what other questions do we have, Helen? I think we got time for one or two more.
Yeah, so before you use we to talk about Mormons earlier, do you still feel more Mormon from a cultural standpoint?
I've heard, and this might be the path that John DeLynn's in right now, and that's why he considers it. I've heard a few other people that they define themselves as culturally Mormon, and that's it. Like, they don't believe any of the doctrine or anything else, but all of the other stuff, like no drinking, watching what kind of movies they pay attention to, all the little things like that, they still are in that camp. I feel like a lot of it's nurture nature. There are a lot of things that the justification for cultural pieces, I don't buy it. So there's a lot of things I don't do anymore. Like, let's see.
I don't know what I'm looking at. Actually, I think if you took down the slideshow, it might.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Big brain. It's my big brain.
Got it.
We're smart here.
Well done, Helen. Helen's got all the brain cells today. But what was that? You were showing us
Your tattoo?
Yes. Okay. This guy. And it's probably.
Oh, you got a Deftones tattoo. Sweet.
Yes, you can.
Yay!
Pretty soon I actually knows what it says, so thank you. But yeah. Also, got that the same day I got to see System of a Down!
Nice. That was so cool. Nice.
But yeah, it all came full circle. I get notice that I'm no longer part of the church, and I get to go see one of my bands that caused one of the first big cracks. So.
Awesome. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, definitely don't consider myself Mormon at all anymore.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think we got time for one more question, maybe two. And this one's really interesting to me. Someone is wondering, are there any pitfalls to be aware of when interacting with LDS members if your goal is to make them feel welcome in the non-Mormon world? What kind of stereotypes do Mormons have of us?
The one thing that I keep coming back to that kind of fits every situation. You won't know if you did it wrong, because they'll be absolutely friendly and nice to you until you're not there. And then somebody else will find out what you did wrong. So if you want to help them feel as welcome as possible, do it somewhere outside of your house. Go somewhere more neutral, like a park. Because if there's something that they notice that might be something little, they won't say anything, because they're very, very, very polite. They're very, there's very few who will go off fire and brimstone like a corner preacher will. You just won't find out right away unless you have a like shared friend that will pass messages back so that you can actually improve the behavior later, which is, you know, constructive and normal. But yeah, go somewhere neutral. No swear words. Some of them, even if I say like even the Mormon swears, there are some people that are like, oh, like I, that freaking dog over there. Like there are some people that will raise some eyebrows at that.
Wait, what is a Mormon swear word?
Like, is Mormon shoot, swear words? You got your own?
Dang. Dang. Basically like just slight modifications where they are still technically swearing, but they won't count it as swearing so they can get away with it. It's, yeah, grandma swear words. That's perfect.
Excellent. So avoid even those.
It just in case you have one of those. Mm-hmm. What I'm wearing is absolutely no. Stick with jeans and a t-shirt. Yeah, I am proud of my porn shoulders.
Oh, porn these shoulders. Are like fanfic shoulders. We would see shoulders. A shirt described in a book. Perhaps.
These are, yes. In fact, just for fun, I intentionally wear tank tops, sometimes full spaghetti straps. Just
you,
if I know.
You
if
dirty, feeling dirty girl. Shame on you.
I know.
Dirty girl.
And this, if I'm wearing like my regular t-shirts, like if any cleavage goes, oh my goodness. Yeah, it's, I got stories. That was another crack, by the way, that we can go into on the hangout. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for the hangout. I cannot wait. We've got so much to get into.
We missed you.
Yes.
Your best bet, really probably the best bet to do, this is going to sound weird, go look up like any articles from church magazines that are guiding teenagers on what to do when looking for a friend. And I have an article because it explains why so many people were not trying to be my friend and why that one friend acted like he did when I played that song in seminary. So yeah, looking up those articles and trying, that will prepare you for what they're looking for and know what red flags to avoid so that you are safe. Like, I don't ever want people to be deceptive, but if you're actually trying to figure out how to make them comfortable, that's where to go. Use their own material. Figure out what they're looking for as someone who's worthy of hanging out with them. If it doesn't fit you, don't do it. It's okay. There are a lot of us that cannot do it. My baby brother is one of them. He has no filter. He is very loud. He has zero respect for the church. And that's okay.
Oh, this is interesting. So this is actually another question, but I want to save it for the hangout. But okay. We want to hear more about your other family members and how they came out of this. So hold that thought. We need to get into that. But I think on that note, let's start wrapping up and then we can actually go into the hangout. So thank you again so much for sharing all of this with us and your experiences and your story and everything that you went through. That was a lot. And
thanks for just being one of the key resources for me once I started making that decision. So like you guys have been that safe spot for me to like check in on Sunday, be like, do you want to know this really crazy Mormon stuff I found out this week? And like, just be normal for a change. And I don't have a whole lot of people I can do that with. My husband just starts rolling his eyes and tunes me out because it's a Tuesday for him, but yeah. You guys have been that spot, and it's kind of cool that I get to tell you first.
Oh, I am so glad to hear that. That really means a lot. That's what we're here for, and to know that that really did help somebody and that you're living proof that this helped you get through all of that is really, really meaningful. So thank you for sharing that with us and for coming here and being on the program.
Anytime.
I'm so excited to have you back.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, Healing, and Support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.